This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
To break down the series so far, the first couple games, and get into talking about some adjustments, potential adjustments, we bring in Benji Ritholz from Nix Film School. Benji, welcome back to The Fan.
Lori, thank you again for having me. Looking forward to speaking about it. It's a great series.
It is. And all right, so what's the number one thing that you've learned so far after two games in this series? What are you taking away? What's your big picture takeaway so far after the first two games?
I think it would have to be that Karl Anthony Towns is at times outperforming Victor Wembanyama, you know, on a quarter-to-quarter basis. I think I understood that Towns would be a good matchup for him. He presents certain challenges to Wembanyama in terms of his size, in terms of his ability to space the floor, things that Wembanyama doesn't usually have to deal with when he's guarding a center, obviously. I did not anticipate there being actual quarters of NBA Finals games where Karl Anthony Towns was the better player. And you certainly saw that in the second quarter of Game 2. You've seen that a couple times throughout the series. And if that continues to be the case, I think the Spurs don't have much of a shot to get back into this thing.
Yeah, who thought we'd be saying that there would be quarters where Karl Anthony Towns would outplay Wemby? So is that the simple answer to the question, why are the Spurs such a good match so far this season? Even dating back to the NBA Cup, this season, you know, all we hear is Western Conference better than Eastern Conference, and, well, OKC, bad match, terrible matchup for the Knicks, and all this sort of stuff. But just as the Spurs were kind of had OKC's number, why are the Spurs a good matchup so far for the Knicks this season?
I think it's twofold. I think it is the Towns element and what that the challenges that presents to Wemby and what it doesn't allow him to do on the defensive end in particular, just sitting at the rim and taking away everything there. But I also think it's what the thing you need against the Knicks to really stress out their defense is a controlling, large-bodied point guard. And we know, like, over the past couple of years, the playoff series where the Knicks have really struggled are against those types of guys, whether it be a Cade Cunningham, whether that be a Tyrese Halliburton, guys that can control the game, seek out Jalen Brunson, and then destroy the Knicks defense by doing that. And the Spurs, as much as they have talented guards, they don't have that guy yet. They're whether it's Castle or whether it's Harper, those guys are still young. They're still prone to bad decisions. You can't just put the ball in their hands, let them take over games yet. De'Aaron Fox doesn't quite have the size to do it consistently and has been a little banged up as well. So I think it's the combination of those two things, like the Knicks' size that they can throw at Wemby on both ends of the floor, and then the Spurs not having that guard that can really take over a game and expose the Knicks' defensive weakness.
Yeah, that gets to the question. I've seen a lot of people say this. Why are the Spurs not exposing Jalen Brunson more? Why are they not pressuring him more? Why are they not going at him? People expecting the Spurs to do to Jalen kind of what the Knicks did to James Harden and just go after him time after time. Is that the answer to that question, that they don't have that guard who could do it?
I think that's definitely part of it. I think, you know, the guard-to-guard screens that would generally bring Brunson into the action, it's something that the Spurs don't have the shooter that can really spring off of those screens and put pressure on their defense. Like as good a shooter as Champagne is, who Brunson's guarding most of the time, he's really a catch and shoot kind of standstill guy. He's not a guy who can shoot on the move. And so Brunson's been able to kind of show on those screen action and then recover back to Champagne without getting really hurt on those actions. It also means that when Wembanyama's not as involved, if you're just running guard to guard screens to kind of hunt Brunson, and obviously the Spurs, like their goal on offense is really to make sure that Wembanyama's involved in every action. So I think it's a combination of a few things as to why they're not hunting him. A part of it definitely also just is they don't have the guard that can do it consistently, possession in, possession out.
They already, the Spurs went from the rookie 20-year-old Dylan Harper playing, I think it was 28 minutes in game one, up to 32 minutes in game two. What do you expect them to do, or what would you do in game three in terms of Dylan Harper usage and between Harper and Castle and De'Aaron Fox and, you know, Vassell? Like, how would you deploy the guards, or how do you expect them potentially to use those guards in game three?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the Harper, you know, upping his minutes was an obvious takeaway from game one. The thing is that Fox kind of found his footing in game two and actually did attack Brunson a few times and got into the paint and had a much better game two. And so I don't think they're going to take away his minutes. I think the guy that might lose some of the minutes is actually Castle, who the Knicks have really good physical guards to throw at him. The only way he creates separation is by kind of bulldozing you on those drives. There's not a lot of finesse to his game. And when you have guys like Josh Hart, Deuce McBride, who are so strong with low centers of gravity and can kind of absorb all of that power, you've seen him kind of struggle throughout the series, and he's not yet a consistent three-point shooter. So I could see Castle's minutes getting lowered in game three at the expense of more Harper. The thing for the Spurs is they really want to keep shooting out on the floor, and because none of their three guards are great three-point shooters, it makes it hard to play them all together. And so that's why you see a lot of Champagne and Vassell with two of those guys and not the third. So they do have to make some choices, and I could see Castle being the one whose minutes gets taken away a bit in game three.
One adjustment I wanted the Knicks to get to quicker in game two is Jalen Brunson was just getting mugged trying to bring the ball up the court. Mm-hmm. And so, well, let me just, assuming the refs let the, you know, eat their whistle and let that level of physicality go in game three, which we don't know. I'm not sure if they'll let it be quite that physical, but assuming that they let them play, how do you expect the Knicks to adapt to that kind of pressure, and especially the pressure by half court, where it always seemed like the Knicks were in danger of going over and back half the time with the level of pressure the Spurs were showing?
Yeah, it's a tough thing to adjust to, because normally what you do is you bring your big man to screen at like half court, let's say, or even past half court, like in the back court, just to get Brunson a little breathing room. But what the Spurs are doing is Wembanyama is not coming up in those scenarios. He's going to hang back with whoever's with him down there, and they're just going to send those guards with the center, and Wembanyama is not going to move. And so it ends up being just the same double team, regardless of who you send up to help Brunson. And it doesn't allow you to just bring the ball up with, like, say, Josh Hart, and then you figure Wembanyama's not going to pressure in full court because, again, Wembanyama's not going to pressure at all. They're going to bring another guard up. And so it almost becomes like this full court press zone situation that is difficult to handle. I think the Knicks did a better job as the game went on.
Late in the game, it got better. Better in the fourth quarter.
And part of that, too, is it's a hard thing for the Spurs to maintain with those guys locking heavy minutes to play full court pressure all night. I think that's some of it. But I thought the Knicks did a better job of, like, hey, who's not up right now? If it's Landry Shamet, if it's Mikal Bridges, whoever, who's not facing it from, like, all the way down court. Let's just let him at least get a few dribbles up and then bring Brunson off. And I think he has an easier time just kind of relieving the pressure that way. But it's a lot to deal with, and they do have a lot of guards to throw at the Knicks. The miracle is I think the Knicks, generally speaking, have done a good job of not turning the ball over too much. Mm-hmm. And even when they have turned it over, it's been a lot of dead ball turnovers, which has prevented the Spurs from getting out and running. And I think that's been a big key to the first two games.
talking to Benji Ritholtz from Knicks Film School about the Knicks and looking ahead to Game 3. So if you were, if you were Mike Brown, would you continue to have Cat be that, you know, open up with Cat defending Wemby and keep him as the primary defender and just stick with that because it's working? Or would you start to maybe sprinkle in some OG looks just to add some variety as the series goes along? How would you handle that?
I wouldn't change it yet. I think having it in your pocket is a really nice card to play if you need to play it. The Knicks defense has been so good.
Yeah.
It's hard to argue that any changes really need to be made. I think Wemby did get loose a bit in the second half of game two. You know, got a couple of dump-off passes for dunks. But, I mean, the Knicks are generally limiting him to these outside shots that you just kind of live with. And if he makes them, he makes them. And I think Cat's done a remarkable job of just staying on his feet and making him make those jumpers over the top. And then the amazing thing is, like, just holding the Spurs to one shot. And that's been the biggest key to me. I mean, they had 5 offensive rebounds in game two. That was the second fewest number they've had all season long.
Remarkable.
They've had over 10 in 10 out of the last 12 games. I mean, to keep them to 5 offensive rebounds is nothing short of like an exemplary effort on the boards. And Cat, being the rebounder that he is, keeping Wemby off that offensive glass is another key. And OG's a good rebounder, but the height differential alone, you might become vulnerable there. So until you have to go to it because Wemby starts to really hurt you off the bounce and OG can take that away, I think the Knicks stay right where they are with Cat on him to start the game.
And how about the other way? If you're Mitch Johnson and or you're advising him, the Spurs head coach, and by the way, don't do that. Don't advise Miss Johnson. But
yeah, Sherry needs it from me. Yeah.
But yeah, I guess he has Greg Popovich, whatever.
Yeah.
But if you were the Spurs, how would you be adjusting, if at all, and defending the Knicks for Game 3? Or would you simply look at it and say, Jalen Brunson has, you know, struggled in both games, in particular the end of Game 1? He obviously, it turned into a Brunson burner, and he pulled out that win for the Knicks. But Brunson has been inefficient through 2 games, and would you just say, all right, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing, or is there anything you would change in approach defensively if you were the Spurs?
It's interesting. That is a dilemma for him because on the one hand, and you hear this in their post-game quotes, like they feel like they could have won both of these games. They said they're the better team, and I wonder if that actually prevents them from making adjustments, and maybe that's an advantage for the Knicks that they're not going to make any significant adjustments. The Knicks, I think, have gotten somewhat comfortable in certain areas attacking this defense. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a difficult defense to score on no matter what because they have an alien at the center of it, something we've never seen before who can cover the entire floor. Like, again, nobody else we've seen. So it's never going to be easy, but I think the Knicks have started to find some cracks. If I were Mitch Johnson, I think I might even take Wemby off of Towns more often than he did in game 2.
Mm-hmm.
Even when he starts possessions on Towns, he's often falling off of him once.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Towns come up to set a screen, so he's essentially zoning up. But the Knicks have countered that by running like empty side actions where nobody else is around, where Wemby has to come up, and they've been really successful in attacking Wemby once he's on the perimeter. So I wonder if Johnson just never even starts him on Towns to start game 3. And I wonder if he plays a little bit of actual zone instead of this like quasi zone where Wemby just actually is able to sit back and not come up into any action and keep them in the paint, which is always San Antonio's goal. So that's, I think, things to keep an eye out for, is like, does Wemby come out to the perimeter defensively even less than he did in game two? I think that might be an adjustment Johnson goes to.
And if they do that, obviously then the advantage, of course, whether that's rebounding, shot blocking, and having Wemby in the paint, but it also means, and he's playing that personal zone along the back line so that he can come out on three-pointers both on both sides, but, you know, right down there by the basket. What does that mean that for the Knicks, what's the counter to that? What opens up if they do go to that zone?
I think Brunson becomes, you know, he frees up a little bit, because I think, you know, I think a lot of people are wondering, why isn't Johnson putting Wemby on Hart to start games? Because he gets it back. And I think what that underrates a bit is how much Wemby being up there with Towns, what it's doing to Brunson, who has to see those arms every time he comes off a screen. And I wonder if Wemby just really sits back and doesn't come up at all and is no longer even involved with Kat, if Brunson starts to see some daylight in the mid-range area where he's really struggled in ways we almost haven't seen before from him, and running guard-to-guard actions, attacking Champagne, Fox, the weaker Spurs defenders, I think that becomes more of a focus if you're not going to be able to drag Wemby out anyway. Okay, so now let's attack their weaker guards and see what we can create. I think that's probably the counter that they'll go to. And then, you know, you have to find those corners that Wemby's kind of abandoning. And either hit, you know, the Knicks have the advantage of these high-release, quick-release shooters. So even when Wemby's closing out, whether it's Bridges, Anunoby, Deuce McBride, all these guys, Landry Shamet, all these guys shoot it so quick that I think you can take advantage of that zone defense by getting the ball in the corners and shooting before he can get out.
You mentioned Deuce McBride. It made me think about those minutes with the Knicks bench and how important they were in Game 2. And part of what I think a lot of us were unhappy with Mike Brown in Game 2 of way back when of the Atlanta Hawks series was, how can you possibly play minutes without either Cat or Brunson on the court? And here was a situation where now with the two BS foul calls, the third and fourth foul calls on Cat, and needing to keep Brunson, get Brunson some minutes so he's fresh for the, you know, end of fourth quarter when you need closing time, you have to go to those backup players, and they play the way that they do. And some beautiful basketball to maintain and actually even expand on a lead. How much of that, the way that Knicks bench is playing and playing in this series, you know, how much of this is coaching and a product of design over the course of a season, and how much of this is just there's a little bit of team of destiny, of luck, of a miracle, of something that we're witnessing, a team sort of just, I don't know, something magical happen in front of our eyes?
No, I believe it's the process of an entire season and the approach that Mike Brown has brought to the table, in contrast to Tom Thibodeau. And I think it's incredible the way it's now bearing fruit in the most important games of, in some of the most important games in Knicks history. Mm-hmm. It's the development of the bench. It's the insistence upon playing the bench in all the games, of lowering the starters' minutes, of Landry Shamet, who was on this roster last season, getting a full chance to show out and be himself and put in positions to succeed, and now becoming, I don't know, probably one of the three best bench players in the playoffs over the course of the whole run. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's such a tremendous credit to the way Brown handled the regular season. I think we went into each of these playoff series saying that the Knicks were the deeper team. And I think that was true in every series, and it's true in this one as well. And the bench points speak for themselves. And to your point, Lori, for like those were scary minutes there without Brunson or Cat in the game. And to see Mikal Bridges, the way he's shot making, Shamet, Deuce, obviously Mitchell Robinson, what he's able to bring to the table, thankfully, despite the finger issue. It's a deep team that can hurt you in a multitude of ways. The role players are not just catch and shoot guys. They're guys who can make shots and take difficult shots at the end of the shot clock. Like, that is a rare commodity to have for an NBA team. Like, you know, 6th, 7th men like Deuce McBride, who can get a shot up at any time. It's again a credit to the front office for finding these guys, and it's credit for Mike Brown for utilizing them the way he has this season.
All right, two more questions, and then we've got a couple callers and got to get back to them. But one is, what's the right Hackamich approach for this series? And has Mike Brown been using him at the right times in games? Mitchell Robinson, should he be using him earlier in quarters? And has it been successful in the way that Mitch Johnson is deploying it?
I think it didn't do it in game one, I don't believe. So really just a game two issue, and that was only in the the end of the first quarter. And I think Mitch made a couple there to keep it within reason. It's almost like if he can shoot 45 to 50%, the Knicks can hang in those minutes when they need to. I think Brown's done a good job, certainly in the prior series, of like kind of baiting a coach into getting into the bonus and reinserting Cat. Yeah. But when Cat has foul trouble, you can't play that game, right? So it's also part of the depends on where Cat is with his fouls, whether or not you can pull Mitch in and out, or whether you just need to play Mitch through it. So I think every game kind of brings a different challenge and strategy there for the Spurs as well, like whether they want to utilize it, how is their offense flowing, do they feel like they need to do it. It doesn't allow them to get out in transition in the way that their half-court offense has played, Laurie. Like, they may just decide, you know what, it's better for us to try to get stops and get out than it is to sit on the foul line and then have to walk the ball up. So I think all that goes into it. I think we'll still see it if the opportunity presents itself. I don't think Mike Brown is going to shuffle much to avoid it, because I think, again, you're 2-0 in the series. It didn't kill you in game two. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're going to see much of a change there, but it's something to definitely pay attention to when you're in that situation when the Knicks are in the bonus.
All right, last question. Yes, you analyze games, but you're also a massive Knicks fan. How are you feeling about this whole thing? What are your emotions right now as a Knicks fan?
Oh, It's pretty surreal. I'm 33, Lori. I don't really remember 99. So this for me is...
I was there. I was in the building. Yeah. I watched it. Yeah.
So I actually think it's a different experience for me than for those who did experience 99. Like, this is truly the first time for me to see the team. To hear them talked about the way they talked about it is such a shock to the system. Like, this is now the team that other teams are going to try to emulate after, yeah, 25 years of fandom, where it was always like, how can we get to this place? You watch the NBA Finals, as you and I probably do every single year, every game, and the thought process is always, well, how in the world does this roster get to like play in this game? Like, yeah, we are playing a different sport than the NBA Finals.
Oh yeah.
And now here they are. And it is a remarkable feeling in the city. It's a remarkable feeling just sitting at home and watching it. It's all pretty surreal and exciting. And listen, 13 straight playoff wins. What else can you say? It's a miracle.
Yeah. Look, in a copycat league, there are different ways to build a team. But you're right. There will be people looking at what the Knicks have done and said, this is a model, what Leanne Rose and the group have done. This is a model on how to try and build an NBA roster. So it does feel like a miracle. Benji Ritholz does a great job talking about the Knicks. Benji, really appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you soon.
Lori, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me. And let's go, Knicks.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B-plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B-minus or a C-plus life, because when you're living a B or B-plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.